Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Frank McIntosh, author of The Relational Leader, a revolutionary framework to engage your team, part one of two. On behalf of the entire Strategy Driven team, I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Frank McIntosh, author of The Relational Leader, a revolutionary framework to engage your team, part one of two. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Frank McIntosh shares with us his insights on people-centered relational leadership that breaks down organizational barriers and engages and motivates employees for achievement of truly superior results. So now, without any further delays, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Frank McIntosh, author of The Relational Leader, a revolutionary framework to engage your team. During his 36-year career, Frank has worked with many of the most recognized companies and executives in the world. He has provided consulting services for peers across the country and helped initiate junior achievement programs in Ireland, the Ivory Coast, Oman, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and Uzbekistan. Frank was inducted into the Delaware Business Leaders Hall of Fame in October 2008, one of 38 individuals so honored, and the first not-for-profit executive to receive this distinction in Delaware's 300-year business history. Frank, welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Nathan, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
I am thrilled to have you on the show, and I think our listeners are just going to learn a wonderful amount from you and gain a lot from your experience. I really enjoyed your book, particularly for all of the real life examples that you provided that really brought it to life for me. And so thank you for coming on and joining us.
My pleasure, really. I enjoy being here and look forward to it.
Well, Frank, to start out our conversation and to ground our audience and provide a context for them, I was hoping you could describe what you see as the difference between management and then leadership, and then to go into the difference between what you see as traditional leadership and relational leadership.
People generally, I've heard this said many, many times, and I kind of subscribe to it myself. Leaders are people who kind of do the right things.
Mm-hmm.
And managers do things right. Good managers do things right, and leaders are thinking about what are the right things to do. Leaders have a future orientation state of mind. They ask a lot of why questions. Managers, they think more in the present tense, and they ask a lot of the how questions. So, and that's essentially it. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't be a leader and a manager.
Mm-hmm.
Many people do that, and they're capable of it. But if you were to draw a distinction, from my point of view anyway, that's what it would be. Traditional leaders, they create great ideas. They have a management team that they put together and put these ideas into play, into systems, and that they either create or cause to be created. They recognize that people are important, but largely to ensure that the product or the service is delivered to the customer. The bottom line for the traditional leader, in my view, is the driving factor in their decisions.
Okay.
Now, relational leaders, they also create ideas, and they put them into play through people that they have in their employ or they're associated with to deliver the product or service. But what the relational leader understands is that the bottom line is most affected by the value he places on the people in his organization. The relational leader, I think, views the people in his organization to include not just the workers, and this is key to a relational leader, not just the workers, mm-hmm. but also the customers, the vendors, the community, and if it's a public corporation, the shareholders. And both type of leaders, they want the same results, but they have a fundamental difference in how they achieve their objective. The traditional leader gets his results by people, whereas the relational leader will get his results with people.
You know, as you describe that, I mean, I can go back and envision various leaders that I've worked with or, as I might say, worked for.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a very clear distinction between the two. And I was always much more motivated to give the extra effort or that discretionary effort for those leaders that I worked with rather than those leaders I worked for.
Yeah, and that's where the whole concept of relationalism comes into play. It's so simple when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
People don't like to be told what to do.
Right.
They want to be involved in the process. They want to be part of it. They want to be respected for who they are, what they know, what they're capable of, et cetera. And when a leader does that, the results are amazing.
Now, Frank, in thinking about the results, you've worked with executives and managers at many companies literally throughout the world. What are the tangible results that you see relational leaders realizing that the ones that are more directive, more hierarchical, traditional leaders don't get?
Well, the relational leader, as we were just talking about, they engage the full person in the pursuit of excellence within the organization. And because of that, the individual feels valued,
mm-hmm.
And they become more invested in the outcomes of the business. And that's what you're really looking for, I believe. Any leader wants their people to be invested in the business, like they're invested. It becomes a shared destination. You respect me, I respect you. I'll demonstrate it not only by working hard, but also by thinking about how I can be better and how the company can do better. That's the kinds of things that relational leaders start to get their workforce thinking about. How does this company get better? Because if this company succeeds, then I'm going to succeed. And I want it to succeed because I like these people. I trust them. And they're acting in not only in their interest, but in my interest as well. I'll give you an example. Years ago, I was out in Denver, and I was very familiar with the Coors Brewery, only from the standpoint of just studying the company, nothing about the product.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. True. But it was family-owned business, if you remember, for a long time. Of course,
yeah.
The brewery, and it had a great family, and it was very relationally led.
Mm-hmm.
They had a strong moral compass. They did the right things for employees. They did the right things in the community. People, their employees, were intensely loyal. And everybody wanted to work at Coors.
Sure. You
know? Everybody did. And they were a very profitable company. Now, also, unlike most breweries around the country, they did not have a union. And whenever union folks tried to organize the workers, they got the same response. What could you give us that we don't already have?
Yeah.
And the answer pretty much was always nothing. And Now, I don't know how it is today that Coors has merged with Molson's and so on, but back in those days, the company was a premium company with premium profit, and they had the most loyal employees that I have ever encountered in my career, and they were just great. And another example is a company called New Page, and New Page is a paper company up in, well, what I'm going to talk about is a plant that they have up in Maine. It's owned by Mark Soon, who was a gentleman that was in my book that I had highlighted in the book. And he bought the company because he saw it was failing. He had retired as CEO and chairman of Louisiana Pacific, and he wasn't ready to retire yet. So he come on to this company called New Page, and up in their main facility, they cut and process wood to make their paper.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that process involves sending logs down a stream to be pulverized, and eventually they became paper. But because the process created a great deal of waste, just about every 3 weeks, the line had to be shut down to clean the water out. And it was a very expensive proposition because it was down for quite a while.
Okay.
The leadership under Mark began focusing on improving that downtime. And they were doing quite well with it. Then one day, this fellow comes up and he says to his manager, he had an idea to keep the line working 24/7.
Wow.
It was really simple. He said, let's gate the water. When it gets clogged up, we'll send the logs the other way. Now, how simple is that?
Yeah.
We'll clean the water out, but nothing stops. It just keeps going. And Mark said to me, he said, you know, I think that fellow had that idea in his head all along, but he did not have a environment in which anybody had any value for him talking about his ideas.
Sure.
Or spreading them to him. But Mark changed that, and it opened the door to employees thinking differently, and he achieved $60 to $70 million and improvements annually by ideas just like that. And it all came as a result of letting people know that their opinions were valued and they would be listened to. And this isn't the old New Page. So.
Oh, that is phenomenal. And it really highlights the fact that our workers, especially the frontline workers, that deal with the processes on a day-to-day basis, they know much more than what we could ever know being away at some distant location. And we just need to tap into that knowledge, that experience, and energize those folks, and we can create direct bottom-line improvements just by tapping into our own folks, and it doesn't cost anything.
No, it doesn't.
Wow, that is phenomenal. Now, Frank, in the very beginning of The Relational Leader, you presented what you called the relationship diagram, which really highlights the people-centric focus of relational leadership. And you had three core elements that comprised this model, those being fidelity, appreciation, and value. Could you, just for a brief moment, elaborate on those three elements, and then why they are so key to being a relational leader?
Sure. Well, each of those elements is made up of what I call attributes.
Mm-hmm.
Fidelity is the prime element, because without fidelity, nothing else can happen, at least relationally. It's made up of trust, character, and fairness. And if we could go back just for a moment to the fellow I was just talking about at the paper plant, right? If he did not trust that he would be treated well for making a suggestion, or at least listened to, right?
Yes,
he would never have said it.
Mm-hmm.
Just wouldn't have happened. I mean, they were running that line for a long time. before Mark came around, and they had that same problem year after year after year. And as Mark said, that was probably in his head. But you have to have an element of fidelity or an element of trust and character. I mean, what about, you know, working for so many of these companies today that we've seen have been splashed all over our headlines for the last 10 or 15 years? So about the greed and all of that that's going on. And those little guys that make the company work are always kind of ignored in that process. So
yeah.
They don't get their share in the greed. They just get what happens when the greed's found out, and it's never good for them.
Absolutely.
So the idea of fidelity and the trust and the character, the fairness, that is critical. Quick example, a friend of mine, Alan Burkhardt. Alan is a tremendous entrepreneur. He just recently acquired a couple of very popular restaurants here in the Delaware area, and they were popular one time, but they were taking a downward turn. And he went into them, and he never was in the restaurant business, interestingly, never. Hmm. And I said something, Alan, gee, you know, everybody I hear of that goes into the restaurant business that doesn't know anything about it usually fails.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, I'm not usually anybody, so I'm me. You do this. I said, okay, your money, not mine. Anyway, he recognized from the get-go that he had to establish trust with his waitstaff. And if he could do that, he could get them to do most anything, because he had the rest of the package to go with us. And so one of the things that he said to them, ready for this? He says, if you would like, I will share our monthly financial statements with you.
Mm. Wow.
I said, you said what?
Yeah.
You're going to share what with them? Monthly financial statements. And I remember vividly what he said to me when I kind of questioned that. He said, well, what are they going to do with them? Sell them to my competitors? And if they did that, so what?
Yeah.
The reality is they're not going to do that.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
And he said, I don't make up rules for things that are not very likely to happen. And then he also did another thing. He said, I'm taking the time clocks out. You're supposed to be here at 10. I expect you'll be here at 10. If you don't get here till 10 past, I expect you to stay till 5, 10 past 5.
Okay.
But you'll monitor that. I'm not going to monitor it. Well, you know what? Those businesses, those restaurants are going gangbusters again.
Mm-hmm.
And the crowds are big every night, and the waitstaff is very happy. And there's a lot more to it than that. That wasn't just, you know, that isn't how we turned it all around. But that's how we established trust.
Huh? Yeah.
And once he had trust, he was able to do the other things. Like, the next thing is appreciation. And that's the next element. And appreciation is about fun and celebration. And he celebrates the big things and the little things. When you think of celebrations in businesses, who do you celebrate? Usually it's some big mucky muck, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who has, you know, done something really good that all the little people did for him.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah, he's the one that's getting the trophy. Right?
Yeah.
The little people aren't getting anything. So Alan very wisely has, when he celebrates at all levels. It's not just the big ones. He celebrates the little victories, because the little victories are what make the big victories possible.
Yeah.
And so that's part of appreciation. And, you know, you can have fun at work. I know in your old background you worked in a very serious business, and you know, if you made a mistake, that wasn't going to be a lot of fun there. But it doesn't mean you can't have some fun. You can't share a moment. You can't enjoy coming to work. It doesn't all have to be, you know, it doesn't all have to be serious. And so yeah. Having fun is a good thing, and celebrating is a good thing. And the final element is value, and we mean by that, or I mean by that, attentiveness and purpose. And what we mean by attentiveness is we want the leader manager to pay attention and be an active listener and an active observer of what is happening with his team.
Okay.
And in so doing, he knows what that is. He's he'll act upon things that he sees. So it's not just looking at it. It's looking at it and doing something about it. And obviously, most people want to be part of something that's purpose-driven, that it gives you a sense that what you're doing is important, and it provides a sense of solidness and direction for the individual. And I don't know, we have time for one more story?
Sure we do, yes.
Nathan Hill. Nathan Hill, mm-hmm. One of my favorite people on earth. He was the second president of Discover Bank and who issued and marketed the Discover card.
Uh-huh.
It went gangbusters onto him. He just took over from this other fellow who did a really good job launching it, but Nathan took it to several levels beyond. And he was the quintessential relational leader, as far as I'm concerned. And I was recently working with some people that told me they had worked at Discover Card. And I said, oh, when was that? And they told me, and I knew it was during Nathan's time. And I said, did you know Nathan Hill? And it was like a chorus between the two of them. They came back and they said, we love Nathan Hill. And I said, well, what makes you love him so much?
Yeah.
And they said, because he cared about us. He cared about our company. He made us work hard, but he made us play hard. And he, just anything that ever, you know, you could say good about somebody, it was Nathan. And so, and they went on. But I was talking to him on the phone, and this is, I think, the key part of the story.
Yeah.
I think it'll drive what I meant about attentiveness. When I was talking to him on the phone, I said to him, you know, I bumped into a couple of people that know you, and they really like you a lot. And he said, well, that's nice. And I said, well, the one was, and I couldn't only remember their first names for them.
Yeah.
Sometimes that problem. But anyway, I named them, the two of them, and I said, I'm struggling with your last names, Nathan. I'm sorry. He said, well, could they have been so-and-so and so-and-so? And I said, oh, yeah, that's what. And I said, how do you know that? He said, well, I knew my people.
Yeah.
He hadn't worked there in over 10 years.
Wow.
In over 10 years. And in that time, he found his way over with Morgan Stanley to head up their Stanley's European operations, and then he retired and so on. And he had 2,000 people working for him when he was here in Delaware, and he remembered these two people, credit analysts. They were not on his top management team.
Right.
They were credit analysts. Knew their name.
Yep. Because his people were important to him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he never, ever, ever, when he saw somebody that seemed to be troubled, he tried to find out why and if he could help them.
Okay.
You know? And if he could, he did. Yeah. So that's the kind of person he is. One last thing I'll say, and that's what he got for results.
Yeah.
Company that was going great, people that loved him and respected him, and just all nothing but good.
Mm-hmm.
But here's one thing that you have to keep in mind. You cannot, all these attributes and elements, they're intertwined with each other. And so if you were to observe an employee being harassed and you didn't do anything about it,
mm-hmm.
what does that say for your trust or fairness? Or if you demonstrate character with employees, for instance,
right.
but are disreputable with vendors, what does that say? You have to be aligned, you have to be authentic, and you can't pick and choose which of these attributes you're going to, you know, do today, or because they all have to be there in the end.
Okay.
Well, authenticity.
Well, Frank, this is a good lead-in to the next question I had, and I was wondering if you could just describe what does the relational leader look like? You know, what behaviors do we see them exhibiting on a routine basis?
Well, I'll repeat the word I ended with the last question, which is authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that they are predictable. What they say and what they do are aligned. And they're always aligned. So if I say this, you can be sure that I not only mean it, but you'll see it in my actions.
Okay.
That is so critical. And the other thing is if you make a mistake, we all make mistakes. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So just get that out of the table. And sometimes you might mess up with, for instance, if you were, you know, we were in the fun thing, right?
Yeah.
And you made a little joke in the lunchroom,
mm-hmm.
and it was at the expense of somebody else, you know? Well, you know, everybody laughs about that, except really the person that you made fun of. Right,
right. Right.
So that gets in, and that's getting towards character and fairness, and it's another thing. Well, okay, so that could happen. That could easily happen, and maybe be unintentional. When you make a mistake, the relational leader will always own up to it.
Okay.
Will say, I made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
What I did, this is what I should have done, and this is what I'm going to do about it. And that's not often seen, right? I mean, what about our friend at BT?
Yeah.
That's what you see with relational leaders. That's what they look like. There's a lot more things, but those two things, you will always be able to tell. If somebody says, this is what I'm about, and then they act it out, you will always see that. And it's very easy to see. And if somebody makes a mistake and they own up to it, that's also very easy to see. And, you know, you'll see other things too, and obviously you'll see them caring about people and the like. And that they respect people, and so on. But you know, those first two things are pretty easy to see.
Now, Frank, a lot of the organizational leaders I work with or have worked with in the past, they still subscribe to this traditional management leadership style, and I would even suggest that if they've received any leadership training at all, it typically is in that traditional hierarchical type practice.
Mm-hmm.
Worst case scenario, folks that seem to me to come from that kind of, I'll call it upbringing, will view a people-focused leader as being somewhat touchy-feely and maybe even weak. Can a relational leader below the CEO or senior officer level in an organization actually exist, survive, and thrive in that traditional kind of setting? And if so, are there any special things they have to do to overcome barriers that might be put in place by those who would subscribe to a more traditional leadership style?
Well, geez, that was a lot of questions.
Yeah, I know. I kind of loaded that one all up.
Well, let's say this. First of all, let me deal with the touchy-feely stuff, right?
Okay.
Nothing could be further from the truth. A relational leader is not touchy-feely. They're just genuine.
Okay.
Right? That is a big difference. Touchy-feely, weak people aren't usually leaders. I mean, if you're weak, you're weak. You're not going to – you have to have followers. And so relational leaders, it's how you get the job done.
Okay.
Back up for a minute about this. You've got a business plan. You've got a product. You've got systems in place, whatever it may be. How are you going to run your business? You know, you've got a good product, and you've got it out in the market, and people are going to buy it because – of the way you have put your marketing plans together, the way you have done your research and development and all of that, all the stuff that it takes to run a business. That has nothing to do, necessarily anyway, with being a relational leader. A relational leader is how you get the most from the people that you are leading.
Mm-hmm.
It is how you get this done. If you had a lousy product and you were a great relational leader, you're probably going to fail. But they'll love you, right?
Okay.
But you're going to fail. You don't have a good product.
Right.
Right? So it isn't about, you know, the business stuff. Everybody thinks, you know, what goes along with the business stuff is that I've got to be command and control. And, you know, you got to do it my way or the highway and all that good old stuff that we've heard for decades on past. But what I'm saying and what is true about a relational leader in today's world,
mm-hmm.
is that you're here to get the most out of your people. You want to keep them. I mean, this whole idea of the 17 careers or whatever it is that we say people are going to have these days.
Oh, yes.
Right? Well, who wants that? I mean, really, it costs a lot of money to replace people.
Oh, yes.
And why would we want that? Right? We want that, I guess, maybe we want it because that's what we got.
Mm-hmm.
And we got it because of the way we treat people. And if we treat them poorly, then they're going to leave. Well, then if you don't want to look bad about this, you say, well, that's the way the world is today. Right?
Right.
I don't think so. I think that if you keep churning people, I worked for a company once many years ago. I was selling a product. I had no idea what it was. But I was selling it. I was pretty good at selling it.
Okay.
I just didn't know what it was. And it required a lot of scientific knowledge. I took Latin 3 and 4. So I didn't take physics or chemistry. But I remember going into a hospital and speaking with their chief engineer and putting out, you know, what it was that I hoped to do and the relationship I wanted to have with them and so on and so forth. And so the fellow went to his Rolodex. Back in those days, they actually had those.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to, we had these very, very bright green business cards, and they were a little bit oversized. So he had no trouble finding the business card. And he went through it, and he just said, let's see, you're not him, and you're not him, you're certainly not her, and you're not him, and you're not. He said, you know, are you getting the picture here? He said, yeah, you have a lot of business cards.
Yeah.
He said, if you're still here 6 months from now, we can talk about an order, but not before.
Ah.
So, you know, people have value. In my own business with Junior Achievement, they didn't want to deal with a new program manager every year.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just got used to this guy. And now he's gone, you know?
Yeah.
Can't you keep your people? What are you doing wrong? You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what people come away with. So relationally led organizations, I had about the lowest turnover of any JA organization in the country. There's 154 of them, and I had about the lowest of all of them because we didn't turn people over. They liked working there. They stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of value for that. Now, if we turn to that another question that was in that series of questions you had, that was about the fellow, the person, the woman who is, you know, has a hankering for this idea, but the boss doesn't seem to like that too much or he doesn't act that way, so why would I do this?
Right.
There's a couple of things to look at there. One is, it's like anything else. If you've got a good idea and you're a leader, it's your job to sell it. Well, I mean, relational leadership has a lot of selling points. So
sure.
You can put together a presentation and go present it and say, give me a chance to do this. That's one way. Another way, depending upon circumstances, there's lots of silos in businesses
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you've got your group and you know, you're not at the corporate headquarters and so on, and you can go ahead and do this. Right? No one's going to know. Right? If the bottom line is that the boss really cares about one thing in the end, what's the bottom line? Am I making money? The shareholders making money?
Mm-hmm.
Selling our product, developing more product, and so on. That's what he cares about.
Right.
If you can show them that you are getting results from the way you're acting with your people, then they're gonna take a shine to that. Right? And I've seen it happen. A woman in the book, Sue Lindemann.
Mm-hmm.
Sue worked for the DuPont company, and she took over a sales position. She was a manager of a group of salespeople for a pretty large region in the country. And there was four or five regions, and I think theirs was at the bottom or close to the bottom.
Okay.
And she revamped this whole thing very relationally. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, we're going to try to do things differently. We're going to work together. We're going to, support each other. And she just laid out a whole plan. And they said, this will be a disaster. She said, we're going to do it. And she drove that. And this goes back to the touchy-feely type.
Right, yes.
Touchy-feely, right?
Yeah.
She wasn't. I mean, she's a wonderful person.
Yeah.
But, touchy-feely is not, how you describe her.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they started seeing results. They got results. And, they got really good results.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, no one was upset about that anymore, right?
Okay.
Everybody was kind of happy that this went on. And she did a great job. And she got promoted very quickly from there and then took over a whole business. And she took over the x-ray business or something at that point.
Okay.
I guess they thought she could see through things. But she showed that within this very staid old company, the DuPont company, you could make changes,
right? Mm-hmm.
That people there would not necessarily embrace, and that you could make them successful.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Frank McIntosh for being with us today and sharing his insights on how to better engage and motivate employees. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Frank McIntosh and The Relational Leader at www.fjmcintosh.com. Until next time, so long.